Welcome to the React Show. Refactoring can be dangerous to your program and to your health. It's a powerful tool, but how do you wield it safely? Today, we're going to learn the techniques used by not only the sous chef, but the head chef themselves.
You were born a social animal in a world that was meant to be less measured, less exact. And now you sit with dancing photons blasting away your eyes as your muscles atrophy and your social skills lapse. In a world where everything is measured and exact, you emerge from your cave that you call an office to find yourself torn away by the currents of the journey, we are all bound together in. Whether you're just learning to write code or you're a 50-year expert that knows APL just as well as TypeScript, we're all on the same journey together. So join us on the React Show as we explore how to make better programs, better teams, better companies, and a better world together. The React Show is a weekly podcast brought to you from occupied Miwok and Powhatan territory, focused on learning more about React, programming in general, and the intersection of programming and the rest of the world. Come, join us on this journey. Thank you for joining us on episode 27. Clearly, I'm the sous chef and Austin is the head chef. So I'll be kicking things off and then we'll be learning from the master. The truth is, even though I'm still second in command in the kitchen, I really do love cooking and baking. Okay, not as much as programming. But I find it a great compliment to programming, as it is both methodical and creative. But you're not staring at the screen the whole time, and you have to give up some control to chemistry and mechanics. Especially bread. I love baking bread, fermenting the yeast, and trying to create the crumb, even in varying temperatures and humidity conditions. So yeah, anyways, what about you, Austin? What can I learn from this, the master head chef? You big on cooking or baking?
Well, I'm kind of a simple guy. I have like the things that I really do enjoy, but I do them very well. One of my favorite dishes to cook is ramen. I really like these one pot recipes where you don't have to like have a lot of mess to clean up. You just have one pot and then your bowl and your utensils to clean up afterward. And as for baking, one of my all-time favorite things to bake, I love banana bread. I usually have a loaf of banana bread at the house at all times.
Oh.
And I make sure that there's an overlap. If I finish one loaf, there's already a loaf in the oven at least.
Oh, that sounds delicious. It took me a while to figure out how to make good vegan banana bread, but yeah, I don't know. I'm too lazy to make it that often, but I do like the one pot cooking for sure.
Yeah, banana bread's the best, like, because just with some simple ingredients, you can really just have a ton of variety. One of my favorite to do is it's called cookie butter. It's kind of like peanut butter, but it's like apparently made of like Biscoff cookies. And I'll take like a huge thing of that and just like get it kind of, I'll mix it with some cream of some sort to make it a little bit more milky than this hard cookie butter. And I'll kind of swirl it into the baking tin. And I really enjoy that.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Yeah, so we're with Owl Creek, an organization focused on baking, React, and React education. I'm your host, Thomas, with my wonderful head chef, Austin. Welcome to the show, Austin.
Thank you again for inviting me back after last episode.
I mean, I'm the sous chef, so isn't it the other way around?
Well... Yeah, that was a surprise. Well, we went last episode, we learned how to become doctors, and now we're in the kitchen. So looking forward to the next episode, whatever we're up to in that one.
I mean, it is the React Show. We become everything.
Right.
Yeah, so if you have feedback on baking, or, well, I don't know, I guess if you have feedback on baking, but if you have feedback on the show or react or questions, whatever, about the podcast, feel free to email us at thereactshow@owlcreek.studio.
Yeah, and do, if you have some cool baking or cooking recipes that we should try out, please, please do. Just note that Thomas is vegan friendly stuff only. Whereas I enjoy a hearty dose of butter in anything I make.
Yeah. Austin is not as animal friendly. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, pretty much. Total abuser here.
I can't laugh at that one. So also, if you want to interact with us directly, have a question, or need some React help, we now have a Discord server set up. Thank you, Austin, for setting that up. Just visit us at owlcreek.studio/discord to join us. And if you haven't already, like always, we'd super appreciate it if you enjoy, you know, hearing us talk about cooking and React. You know, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and comment this podcast. It definitely helps us continue to bring shows like this to you every week. And yeah, now that we have convinced everyone to give us 5 stars and comment on how strange our intros are, I think it's time to move on to the main show here. So we're actually not going to talk maybe so much about cooking, but we are going to talk about refactoring. And we might start out with a little bit of our own experience refactoring. And then we'll just take a look at, like, what is the purpose of refactoring? And what is the challenge? What makes it difficult? And then we'll look at a method that I use. Apparently, that's what we do in episodes like this. We'll look at a method I use to refactor in a hopefully more productive, safe way. I think that about covers it. Let's get started. So I was just going to talk a little bit about how I think for a long time I had, like, sort of delusions of grandeur when it came to my own refactoring ability. I would look at code and be like, oh, this code sucks. Why did people do it this way? Like, oh, I can see like 1,000 different better ways to write this code. I don't know. Austin, have you ever had that where you're just like, oh, this code sucks, I can do this so much better?
Yeah, you have to be very careful about that. And I think this also ties into problems we've been running into recently, is instead of refactoring the code, just like saying, oh, well, I'm just going to remake this whole thing without understanding what the original intention was. And that's where refactoring can get dangerous, because there may be things you don't even know that are a part of the whole current implementation, and it can have a lot of side effects if you're not very aware about what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, thank you, head chef. Words of wisdom, everyone. No, it's totally true. Yeah. So I used to always think that, and like, I was remembering maybe 10 years ago when I worked at Hot Pads, on the front end. Well, actually I was doing full stack. Yeah. Cause this is actually more of a Java thing. So I was like, oh man, part of it was just Java isms, you know, they're very verbose, but I'm like, oh, I could write this API like interface so much better, you know? And so I just like ripped it all out and just started refactoring. And it became impossible to like remember everything that I had touched and changed. And it was really overwhelming. I'm like, I don't know. I know I can make it better, but now I'm like, I feel lost, you know? And my brain is just like working so hard trying to like reconnect all the pieces. And, you know, it is painful. And then of course, you know, you get pressure from higher up to be like, hey, what's taking so long? When are you going to get this thing launched? And you're like, oh no, I'm like deep in this hole and nothing works anymore. And it's, yeah. And so I was definitely there, and it wasn't the first time. I've done this many times, you know, And the funny thing is, too, that I always learned is, like, when I would get into it, it's exactly like Austin said. I'm like, oh, this is, like, I could do this so much better without spending any time to think about why it was done that way in the first place. And then the funny thing is, my end result, I would realize, looks a lot like the original version, because, like, it was done that way for a reason. And because of the way I tried to refactor it, I couldn't really get it working right without copying what they had done. You know, it was like, oh no, I need to get it done. I guess I'm going to have to do what they did. And the end result was I broke a lot of things, and I did have some cool gnarly Java reflections code that, like, there was some cool, like, parts of it, but, like, it was so bad that I wouldn't even let it get applied to anyone else's code. It was like, so it was really like this pointless refactoring that took forever. And yeah, definitely not my only time when I did that. Yeah, so I guess this is on to you, Austin. I know you've recently had some experience with maybe this wasn't you necessarily doing the refactoring, right? But you were involved in a project where some was done and it didn't go well.
Well, yeah, I was involved in the refactoring in a way that was rather annoying, actually. So I was under the impression that I was going to do a certain implementation of a feature based off, it was kind of a copy of another feature for different types of order handling. And so I was told to do just like the other implementation and just kind of map it over. So I spent a good, like, week and a half getting all of that prepared. And then apparently those rules didn't apply for the backend team, and they did a refactoring of how we handle all these different types of shipments and stuff. And so I had to refactor my code that I had already written under the assumptions that I was expecting something else. And now that refactoring on the server side that was done introduced all of the pain points that were avoided in the other implementation. They highlighted them, and now that server-side implementation is being redone to accommodate for what we should have learned from the beginning. And now I'm having to go back through as these refactorings that are happening post-mortem, and I'm having to kind of re-implement what I had already implemented in the beginning. So yeah, like, premature refactoring can lead to a lot of pain, and especially if you're putting out stuff in production, and you shouldn't be trying to come up with trying to reinvent the wheel on something you don't even know about is a very bad idea, because we're dealing with a lot of production side bugs coming through with that one, and we're kind of discovering more every day. So yeah, that's my experience with that recently. And also, yeah, there was also a time where there were a ton of components that I made in this one. I had, like, everything all in one file. I had all the components that were related to that page simply in that one file, because they didn't really need to be broken out and stuffed away into different places. And then I had complaints from people who were trying to read the code that the file was too big, so I should abstract out the components into other files. And so, like, I spent two or three hours doing that. And it's like, ultimately, like, why I did that refactoring is because the person who requested it didn't take the time to, like, actually read the file. And so it created extra work, which I didn't mind billing, but, like, kind of for no reason.
Yeah. I guess going back to your first example, I thought that was really interesting, because, so I actually worked on the stuff that Austin was basing his work on. So I, and I had actually talked with the person that was no longer with the project, but we had actually talked about refactoring that code because it wasn't good and it needed to be refactored. But we had a different, I guess, because I was probably leading it, it was a different way of refactoring that I think would have avoided all this. And we're going to, I guess, get into what that is here. But like, it really highlights a lot of the things you don't want to do. Like, I think like starting a new thing with refactoring is like number one. Like, it's very tempting. Like, in fact, I would say it's almost the default. People are like, oh, I'm starting a new version of this or whatever. I'm going to start it out with some refactoring because I'm building it new. That only makes sense. I really strongly caution against people doing that. So in this project Austin was talking about, my plan was to refactor the existing code like before we started this new project so that we could prove it out and have it all figured out, you know, using the existing test suite and, you know, everything that already was there, and we could see exactly what we needed. We weren't trying to like, so the problem is, and this is what Austin ran into, you're refactoring and building a new feature at the same time, which means your end result is not clear. Whereas if you're refactoring something that already exists, you know exactly what the end result needs to be. And so you start mixing those two things and you end up in a really weird state. And I know that's what Austin ran into there.
Well, and like you said, this new feature also does not have any tests for it because like the whole functionality pretty much changed and it was a rush job. Like get this stuff out with this. Like this is where it's good to try to get something out quickly, but like we're now dealing with the repercussions of trying to get something out quickly by creating a botched implementation from the beginning. And now we are literally just dealing with all these repercussions, and it's taking longer to tie it all up than it would have to just have done it right from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really great point. It's pretty certain that if the whole team had just, you know, taken what already exists and implemented it with that and then said, hey, let's start refactoring, it would have been done now and we would have had better code.
Yeah, getting a little nauseous. The trauma is too much, I think, Thomas. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's good. We'll we'll move on to talking about how to make this better. So what is the purpose of refactoring? To me, it's to make the code better. That can mean a lot of things, but the goal is not to add new features. Like maybe internally you're adding some new features, but I try to even avoid that. Like to me, refactoring should be limited to replacing what exists with something better, not like with something better and 10 new features. And this is a big problem people often run into. What I used to run into is, and I think it leads to a lot of problems. So the challenge of refactoring, how do you do refactoring so that you don't break things unintentionally? How do you do it so you don't get stuck in the details and unable to move forward where you're like, I don't even know what to do next, or like you're just buried in it, you know? How do you avoid that? And how do you make sure it doesn't take forever? That's another thing that can happen, is it just goes on and on and on. So we're going to look at what I've learned in terms of like making that go better, preventing those things. So the number one thing is, and Austin and I have already been talking about this a lot because it's such a big thing, and that is code is the way it is for a reason. And maybe part of that reason is not important or not relevant anymore, but it's like that for a reason. And it's really ideal if you can understand that reason. Like, you know, in that example Austin and I were talking about, like some of the changes that were made because the person writing the new version didn't understand why it was the way it was, and they thought, oh, this makes things way more complicated, I'll just remove it and then things will be simple and the code will be better. And they were right, the code was better, but it didn't function correctly anymore. And so they ended up having to go add that stuff back in, but now it's like bolted on. So now your shiny new refactored code is in worse state again. That leads into the next thing, and that is that I strongly prefer to do it incrementally. So like I said earlier, we're not adding new features. We're taking something that already exists and we're replacing it with a new version that's better code. And the way I usually like to do it is actually develop it in parallel. So like in React, I had this recently. There was like this really complicated component, and I knew it needed to be refactored. So what did I do? I copy and pasted that original component to a new file, you know, and put the number 2 on the end of its name or something, you know? And I started working within that one. And that way I could easily swap back and forth and be like, okay, here's how the old one worked. Here's how the new one works. Do they work the same? You know, is the behavior in this part the same as the behavior in another part? I'm not just ripping up the current version and trying to like reimagine it. I'm just taking what already exists and making it internally better. I don't know, Austin, have you done refactoring that way? Or I'm just curious.
Well, it makes me think about the episode we did on how to like properly do code reviews. That this is just like what came to my mind is like a lot of code reviews, you're like getting into these weird nitpicky things that don't like necessarily have to do with anything important. Whereas like looking at the paradigms that are being used and like certain ways of handling them and like focusing on, instead of going like willy-nilly with these, like being very careful about like progressively implementing these, that was kind of on my mind and kind of clouded the rest of it. Sorry.
Oh, no, that makes sense. That's good. I'm curious though, have you actually done refactoring where you build something in parallel, or do you always rip it out?
I don't think I've ever done it in parallel. I've always kind of so you're saying by doing it in parallel that you can like iteratively add progressive enhancements to what you're refactoring, without like changing the current implementation. And how does that sync with like the deployment cycle of something? How do you manage that when it's in parallel like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think of it like the bottom up type approach. We'll talk about more about this in example later, but like I try to like look at the project, the refactoring project, and break it down into like deployable pieces. So I'll be like, oh, can I like do just this one part first? Or like, are there ways I can break this down so I can do it in pieces? And I'll do those pieces, get them through code review and get them deployed. So I'm like sort of using the code in real time while I'm also developing the refactoring. In fact, the story time we're going to have at the end here, I don't even know if you know this, but I've been doing this recently in one of our projects. A lot of the PRs have been a part of a refactoring, like a very large refactoring, and it might not even seem connected, but like in my head, I'm like looking at like, okay, what are all these pieces and how can I break it down so I can do it in an incremental fashion? So that's, I don't know, I guess that's the way I think about it. It might take a little bit of getting used to. And I think you have a really good question. Like, how does that work in terms of like the deployment? Obviously some things, you know, you can't just deploy in a tiny piece. Like, and so what I do then is I develop 2 complete versions in parallel and have the new version be working as much as possible while the existing version is still there. So like, let's say an API call comes in. I'm going to send that API call to both versions of the code. And only one of the versions will end up, you know, storing the final result or whatever that the user sees. But otherwise, they're both going to be used. And then I can be like, okay, both of them are tested. Both of them are being used in production. I can see they're producing the same result, that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does completely. And then like as you ensure that each part is tested and you vetted it, then you'll cycle out the old version and have the new one working properly.
Yep, exactly. Okay. And yeah, go on.
And so you'll like when you do a refactoring, you'll like break out the main components of the refactoring job into like different chunks and like go through them like one at a time, like do one in parallel, test it, refactor it, implement it, or how, like, will you batch replace them all at once, or do you do it like incrementally?
Yeah, so I try to do it as incremental as possible, and that ties in perfectly to our next topic, which is contracts. So where do you break things down? I break it down based on contracts, and contracts are between input and output, and that can be functions, components, interfaces, libraries, can be a lot of things, but basically anywhere where you have some input and you're expecting like a certain output. And, you know, so when I'm refactoring, I'm really looking at these contracts. So I'm like, okay, is there a function that I can replace, or a series of functions, or a method of doing things, you know? And I'll look at what is the input to this method of doing things and what is the output. And I'm going to be like, okay, now I need to make sure I get those two things right. Like my output needs to match the output of the old version given the same input. Does that make sense, like, as a way to break it down?
Yeah, completely. I think it's pretty good, and it's very methodical, and it creates like it's much cleaner than like, because I know when I've done like you get like 3/4 of the way through a refactoring, and then you realize like, oh my goodness, I am like out in the middle of the jungle. I lost my machete a long time ago, and I'm just gonna like sit down and let the jaguars take me. And you have no clue where to progress from there, because, and then you forgot to commit like your last the last checkpoint of when it was working, and you're looking at all this stuff and you're like, shoot, I'm going to have to stash all these changes.
Oh, you're describing this exactly perfect. I mean, that is absolutely the feeling we all get into situation.
Yeah, it's no fun. It's like, it's pretty upsetting when you get to that point. So I like this process you're saying of like really breaking it down and into its incremental parts.
Yeah, and
or contracts.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it can be intimidating to start with, because you're like, oh, this is going to take me way longer because I'm going to have to like try to figure out how to break it down and stuff. I can't just get in there and start ripping things apart. But I found it works way better because you always have that working version. Like, and that's so important that Austin was saying, like, when you don't have that working version and you don't know where to go anymore, like, it is... I mean, that is a dark place to be. You're like, I don't want to go to work today. I don't want to even touch this program anymore. Like, you're so excited and then you're like stuck, you know, it sucks. So that's what we're looking to avoid here is, you know, putting a little more effort up front into how you break this down and do it incrementally. But I also want to talk about like contracts, like from a programming perspective as well. Like, so when I'm doing refactoring, let's say I'm like, I want to change the props that go to a component because I think there's a better way we could pass this data. That is breaking a contract to that component. And so if you break that contract, you always need to keep in mind, okay, I need to check every single use of this component and update it, right? That's pretty logical, right? But I think it's easy when you're refactoring to be like, oh, I'll change it here and I'll fix all the other cases later. And that might be fine, but I actually even write it down usually. I'll be like, okay, double check this component, make sure it's, you know, passing things correctly now that I've changed the interface. Same with functions or whatever else you're doing. Like, if you ever change the input or the output, you need to make sure that everywhere in the application gets updated. In fact, I've seen, that's actually one of the most common issues I've seen with refactorings, is people will be like, oh, I changed the props on this and it's much better. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But hey, look, now this page doesn't work anymore because you forgot to update it over here. And they're like, oh, of course. And I'm like, yeah, I know it's of course, but like, pay attention. You know, these are like, you're breaking the contract here.
Well, it also comes into, I think it's important to do it as like a separate implementation, like you're saying, this parallel effect, because perhaps like your new way of refactoring it, not all of the so say you have component A, that is the non-refactored version, and then you have component B that you're assuming you can just take component A and refactor it there and be able to implement it. It'll just work throughout all of your application. There's a good chance when you're doing the refactoring that the new way of using it might not fit certain edge cases throughout the app where that component is also being used, right? And so just by assuming that your refactoring of component A into component B will just work throughout the rest of your application is kind of a dangerous assumption as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I guess I didn't say it. You said it much better. It's like, that's what I'm getting at is, if I break a contract, I try to actually test all the use cases as soon as I can, not before I've like developed everything else, you know, because Austin's totally right. Even me in my, you know, sous chef wisdom, you know, I rarely get it right the first time, even when I think I did. And
you're still learning and it's okay. We'll get there.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm trying to be patient.
Oh, I appreciate it, Master. So basically, if you break that contract, check that it's working correctly everywhere. And it can be kind of a pain, but I think it pays off in the long run. And I wanted to get into next, I think it's important to remember the bottom-up approach to programming here as well. And so I take like a bottom-up approach to my refactoring. I don't worry about code duplication. In fact, there's usually tons to start with, you know, like I try to always have it be working. And I worry about all those details at the end. Like, you know, my goal is to get the contracts correct, get things working, to prove it works right. Then I worry about all the rest. And as a part of that, I want to say, like, avoid what's called the second system effect. So, like, it's really easy to look at an API or whatever, a system, and be like, it's bad. I know a better way to do it. The temptation is to do, like, 5,000 things better at once. And you'll end up in all these bad situations we've been talking about. So I try to restrict myself to, I'm only going to do what the old system did to start with. I have all these ideas for new features I'm going to also do, but those are only allowed to be deployed after the new refactored version is up and running. I don't know. I think the second system effect is something I see a lot, especially from like, sort of like intermediate level programmers who know more like what good code looks like, and they might know how to write good code, but they haven't quite learned like the best way to do it. And so they'll just tackle this like, oh yeah, I could do it all. And, you know, I got all these brilliant ideas, and in the end result ends up being really bad in my experience. Alston, have you ever experienced that? Have you ever seen somebody do that?
Plenty of times.
I was going to say, I was thinking of one that you were not too happy about with, titles, being changed and such, the mechanism to change titles.
Yeah. It's important to like, this is where just like having an understanding and especially when you're working with teams, like it's good to have like an understanding of what is going to work for everyone too when you do a refactoring, Because, like, if you just go start doing it in some alternative paradigm, then the people on your team are maybe left with that code. It's like, and then like, I know I'm reviewing a PR right now that you sent me last night. And it's done in an alternative paradigm as well. And now we're having to maintain this. And it's like, there's no point in going through and trying to refactor it because it's quite unique in its own complexity. So it's like now we're building upon that. And so just being sure, like when you're doing stuff from the beginning, that there's some sort of consensus on how to do it. I mean, this is now actually, I'm thinking of multiple things where there was no consensus beforehand, before some PRs were out, and now there's multiple branches that have been merged into production that were written in alternative paradigms. And it's like, well, are we even going to be able to get to those? I hope maybe not, right?
Yeah. The PR you're talking about, you know, what's interesting about that is I do have a branch where I'm in the process of refactoring it, but I haven't finished. And, you know, this made me realize why. It's because I didn't do it right. I needed to do it more incrementally. Okay, lesson to the sous chef here.
It's okay. You're like we said. I'm patient. I'm patient with you.
Yeah. No, I mean that's really interesting. It's that's the thing you run into. You're like, this code, maybe it's fine, but it doesn't fit with what we do here, what we understand, or the rest of the code, and it does need to be changed, but you can still get into this situation. Yeah. So I think, I mean, that's really all I had in terms of the method that I use. I you know, part of this is just experience too. Like you need to do it and work at trying to do it in a more incremental way, and be aware of the contracts. And I think if you do that, you'll start to get better at it. But even me who uses this method, sometimes I think I'm better than I am and I don't use it, cause I'm like, I could just do it the brute force method. And it doesn't work out. Like there's a reason why that branch isn't finished, you know?
Well, I mean, at least you're reflecting on what you're doing, and we're getting better. So,
well, thank you.
Let me know when that one's ready for review too.
I got to redo it incrementally this time. All right. Yeah. So I was just, now that we've talked about this method, I was going to talk about how I am actually applying it currently. So I'm working on an extremely large, I guess it's a feature, but it's also, this is bad in this respect, that it's both a new feature and a refactoring project. But so I'm working on this inventory system, and we need to dramatically change the way that it internally, like what it can handle. And so like, this is where I was saying Austin probably doesn't know this, but I've been submitting lots of PRs related to it that probably don't seem related. But like one of them is we need the information to be more structured. And so one of the things I'm doing as a part of this project is adding components and sys stuff to validate user input better and to provide better interfaces for it. It's pretty far removed from the backend's way of storing this data, but it's something that needs to be done before we can have this new inventory system. And so what I'm doing is like, I'm like, okay, how much of this new stuff can we just implement using the old system? And then for the new part of the system, I'm developing it in parallel. And the plan is to have it exactly like Austin and I were talking about. It will be running on the backend in parallel, and until we can prove that it works. So yeah, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Austin, or if you knew that, but
yeah, no, that's cool. I wasn't aware of that. And yeah, I do like this. What is that library you're eye masking?
Yeah.
Eye mask. Yeah. Yeah, I've always seen these like types of input fields on applications, but I didn't know it was referred to as IMASC.
Masking. It's called IMASC.
Masking.
Masking. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That was the practice, and it's. I'm going to start doing that a lot more on input fields that I have as well, because, yeah, like if you can ensure that your input that's going to the server is like what's expected. I mean, humans are the source of all bugs, right? So if you can at least like limit and redirect, not just bugs in the code, but bugs everywhere, right? It's like, oh, whoops, didn't know if I hit the submit button, it would do all of that to the whole the whole suite of the application.
Yeah. And that's like, so like this project, it's, you know, we can't have any downtime and it has to be 100% accurate. So like going back to like the contracts, you know, this is where like you're ultimately, you got to be on your game. Like you have to, your inputs and outputs must be 100% there, or you know, things are bad. Like, it's not like a lot of refactoring you do. It's like, oh, I have a bug. I can deploy a fix for it, whatever. You know, this system, if you have a bug, I mean, it could mean losing many thousands, tens of thousands, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, or not procuring the inventory you need that earns you that much or something. So like, It's a system where, you know, refactoring might be more challenging, but we'll see how it goes. yeah, so I think that's about what I had for the show in terms of doing refactoring. I actually love refactoring now. I feel like I say this about everything. I love debugging now. I love performance optimization now, and you know, I didn't used to at some point, but like, I don't know if I love refactoring as much as debugging, but I still enjoy it, because like, if you do it in this incremental way where you have a working version all the time, it's a lot of fun, because you're like, oh yeah, I'm making progress, you know? So I enjoy that. I don't know if do you enjoy refactoring these days, or do you want to write new features?
I have a hard time getting into the mode of refactoring in our current projects and stuff, but I do enjoy, especially when you have like an old project that you haven't touched in a while and you've learned a lot of new things, and you can like be like, oh man, I know how to do all of that stuff now. It's real fun to do it for me then.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I need to do that again. I haven't done that for a while. That's a lot of fun. You're like, oh, I just replaced all this code with this like one function call that does it all. You're like, I wish I knew that back then. But then you're like, oh no, it's cool, because now I get to do it and replace all my code now. Yeah, that's fun. And I think the fun part of that type of thing too is you're not under pressure. I think the thing that really gets you when you're refactoring, like especially for a job or something, is you feel all this pressure to like get it done and get it working. Whereas when it's like doing that fun type of thing for yourself, you don't have that pressure. And so your brain is, I don't know, somehow more free to make it work or something. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Does that happen to you, Austin?
Yeah, definitely. My main thing is just like looking back through old projects and like just realizing the paradigms that I've learned since, and just like, it's really cool. You can also see like your progress of like how you've learned everything. And, it's really that makes me happy is refactoring these kind of things. And also it's nice too, to just, you have like the MVP of some, like a company I'm building out right now. I built like the landing page for it and everything, and just like made it really simple using some pretty lean methods for like forms and everything, just like using Google Forms and like figuring out what you need to do in the future before like building out this complexity that may not even be necessary, and then refactoring based on the feedback you get and such.
So like doing it in a really incremental way then, it sounds like.
Yeah. And like having, and that's fun when the refactoring like actually has a purpose, like you're building or extending features with the refactoring instead of just having to refactor for the sake of like making it run better. I find that it makes the, when you can integrate progressive refactoring into like optimizing a new version is always more fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I wonder if it like, sometimes I feel like that can go the wrong way, but if it works out well, it's a lot of fun. Yeah. like if you're breaking those contracts to add new features or whatever, you know, getting it right can be more challenging, but I guess if you do, it's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So if you, you know, if you have any, refactoring war stories or whatever, you know, we'd love to hear from you. So today we looked at, the purpose of refactoring, you know, to make our code better, the challenges, you know, breaking things unintentionally, getting mired in the details, it taking forever, getting discouraged. And then, the method that I use, which is doing things incrementally, understanding why the code is the way it was, paying attention to contracts, trying to program bottom up, those kind of things. And we of course got some story time today. You know, hopefully that was somewhat entertaining. and you know, of course, we learned all about baking banana bread and other good things. So. But yeah, I think that's, that about covers our, refactoring, you know, quickly, safely, and easily. So, you know, if you try this method, feel free to let us know. I'd love to hear if there's things or if like there's things you already know that could be improved upon this method. You know, I'm definitely wanting to learn here, you know, in my sous chef position. Yeah, feel free to send us feedback or questions to the React Show at owlcreek.studio. And yeah, before we sign off, did you have anything else, Austin, you wanted to let everyone know?
No, I think that pretty much wraps it all up. Thanks for your thoughts on like iterative refactoring and doing it in parallel. I like that approach a lot. And I think it, like you said, even though it may take more time, to do it that way, you're making sure and you're ensuring that the refactoring is going to like have the intended end effect, right? So, I mean, time spent on stuff like that shouldn't be seen as like a waste. It's like, cause the examples we used earlier, there was no parallelization of the refactoring. It was just kind of done within like some bad assumptions. And now we're wasting all this time, cleaning up. Right. So doing it properly from the beginning, always pays off.
Yeah. Sounds good. I wish I always remembered that, but
well, that's why you're training with me.
Oh, that's a good point. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Austin. And thank you, everyone else, for joining us once again. We hope you had a great you know, day so far. And we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. See you later. Bye.
Bye.